The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on December 4, 2022. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you all on this bright, cheery day. Well, this morning, I was going to say something about karma. I never say karma. Well, I just said it, but I mean, it's not commonly something I talk about. I don't use the word, though my teaching is saturated with it. But Jed, in his the last class he's been teaching now, he's been talking about karma. He's done a very good job, I must say. A lot of subtle points that he's bringing out. And he seems to understand the subtle teaching of karma. But as I mentioned, I don't normally use the word karma in my teaching. The reason for that is because most people who have ever used or have ever heard of the word karma or whatever, they have the wrong idea about karma. And as I also just said, that what I teach is saturated with the teaching of karma. It might not sound that way to you, because the Buddhist understanding, the true Buddhist understanding, there's plenty of Buddhists who use karma in kind of a confused way. That sort of matches the standard parlance, you know, the word as we use it in the language. And that's very unfortunate, because in thinking of karma in the way that we commonly do, sort of like retribution or something, what goes around comes around, that sort of thing. You act in a bad way, bad karma comes back to you. And you act in a good way, and the good will come back to you. And from there we start to think that, Buddhism then must teach, good karma. Well, what are we even talking about? Well, karma literally, translated into English, means action. That's all. That's all that it means. The Buddha, in using this term, didn't refer to just action, but he pointed to something very specific. And this is of life and death importance. The way the Buddha used the term karma, he's speaking of willed action. Now, I've pointed this out many times to those of you who've heard my teaching for a while now. This is probably not new to you, but maybe what I haven't stressed enough is the supreme importance of this distinction, this understanding. Because if you understand karma in the usual everyday way that it's used and tossed about, you will never understand. I mean this, you will never, if you continue to think of karma and the way that it's usually handled, even by many Buddhists, in the ordinary sort of way that we use karma, hey man, don't steal those apples, that's bad karma, that kind of stuff. Or I want to do something good, but so I can create good karma, or that will bring good karma. Just don't even think in those terms. Because if you do, you will not understand. You do not understand, and you will not understand the subtle truth in the Buddha's teaching. So this is of real importance. Some years ago, I was invited to speak at, I'm not sure exactly what it was, but at a Catholic college, some kind of, symposium, whatever, I don't know what. And I was there with another Buddhist priest with a Zen lineage, not ours, but a Zen Buddhist priest, who was just recently ordained. And she was asked to attend, I believe, because she was engaged in engaged Buddhism, as it was called, which is very good. It's about, you know, doing good works, applying good Buddhist principles to everyday life and to help people in all sorts of ways. Now, I want to make it very clear that I'm not putting this down or saying that that's bad or wrong or that's not what Buddhism is about. There's nothing wrong with that at all. If there's anything wrong with it, it's easy to go from there to thinking in terms of karma in the usual way that it's tossed about and used in our society to the extent that it is. But certainly, to do what is good, people even translate in the Buddhist teaching, like in the 183rd verse of the Dhammapada, where the Buddha will say, do what is good, avoid what is evil. You know, well, that's as soon as you do that, it's right back in the confusion that we've always been in. And from that point, if you're still hanging on to that understanding, you will never understand the liberation, the freedom that comes with understanding what it is that the Buddha actually taught, what he pointed out, what he realized in his enlightenment. So this is a very subtle point, and it is a very important point. If your interest is in waking up, to not continue to be confused about this reality, this life that we live as all beings. So this is, I would say, of supreme importance just to understand this. So that's why I want to say something about it now. I don't think everything I'm going to say today, I've probably given you before, but today I want to kind of emphasize just how important this is and how much it underlies virtually all the teachings, all the true teachings of Dharma. And I'll give some examples of that. But how it also gets overlooked, you, in reading these teachings, you won't realize, particularly if you hold that common everyday understanding of karma, you will not understand that these teachings are saturated with just pointing out karma and what it is, and how important it is. This is one of the two great insights, by the way, of the Buddha. This, along with his teaching that we don't find self within experience. And in fact, these two, to the extent that they both easily get confused or misunderstood, people think the Buddha taught that there's no self or something like this. No, the Buddha didn't teach that. You point out that anything you want to take hold of, though, is not self, including what you might think of as yourself. And what would that be exactly? Your body or your mind, some aspect of your mind? Or whatever you get a hold of, this is not self. And this is very much linked with what the Buddha realized about the nature of willed action or karma. And so this is all of supreme importance. It's very important. If you're interested in waking up. So I just want to say that I was to speak at this symposium or whatever it was. And unfortunately, before we went out, I mentioned this other priest. And she was young and newly ordained, but very energetic and had a good understanding of this practice of engaged Buddhism, as that was being used a lot back in those days, about 15, 16 years ago or something like that. Anyway, but in talking with her beforehand, before we went on stage, and we were sort of there and questioned by a moderator and stuff, then there was also a professor of Buddhism and a Buddhist scholar who spoke after we did. And the questions were going to be on this matter of engaged Buddhism. And what I had to say about it were things that I want to say this morning, and I will be saying. But I kind of soft-pedaled it a bit at the time, I remember, because I was with this young priest before we went out, and we just had 20, 30 minutes or so just sitting there waiting to go on or whatever. And so we were talking, and then I realized, how enthusiastic she was about this. And I wasn't prepared to say some of the things that I'm going to say this morning. I was going to look at it all in a completely different way. And I wanted to go easy on it, partly because I didn't want to confuse her. But also I didn't want to confuse the audience. Later, the professor came out and pointed out that, here this is at a Catholic college I mentioned, and as well how among Catholics, they have a very good practice of getting out there into the world doing good works and taking care of people in that way. And maybe the fact that they were doing good. What is it that Buddhists do? We don't seem to be all that engaged in society, and we're not doing a whole lot. So people were getting kind of interested in taking on practices like this and going out and working in communities and things of this sort and do some good. And that's all fine. There's nothing wrong with that exactly. But that is not the Buddha's message. That's not the Buddha's teaching. This thing about good and creating good karma as opposed to bad karma. We go through the world in this way. Many people think this is what Buddhism is basically about. No, it's basically about, if anything, the non-production of karma, period. Whether it's good or bad. Who's calling it good or bad? I'm not pointing to any specific things, so I'll just say there's good and there's bad. But how is that determined? And who's going to say what's good or bad? You can have organizations there that say they want to take little children from what they view as unfortunate circumstances and put them in homes, bring them to places where they can put them in and give them a better situation in life. Well, who's determining all of this, good or bad? And what are you doing? And who are you taking them from, under what circumstances? So you could be doing a lot of these good actions. But what is it based on? We have the story, well, we use it as a story, it's a Taoist story of the wise Chinese farmer. I won't repeat, well, it's basically his horse runs off, and that's bad. And then his horse comes back with more horses, and that's good. And then his son, the next day, breaks his leg, breaking one of the horses. And that's bad. And then the next day, the army passes them over. They're looking for young men to fight the war and whatever. And they pass him over because of his broken leg. And that's supposedly good, you know. So there's good and bad. Just trading off like this. But who's going to say? Which is what the wise Chinese farmer. Wise, because at each turn, while people were cheering him on or commiserating or whatever, he would just say, who can say what's good or bad? Look at this. Don't think about it so much, but just look at it, notice it. Watch your mind as well. Notice your mind will lean in ways like this. Yeah, and they want to go toward the good and the bad, but who says this is good? The people who flew the planes into the buildings in New York, 20 years ago, they thought they were doing good, no doubt. Other people have a different idea about what good is. We call that bad. And then we can continue to fight and argue, but you did this, so this is retaliation for that, and on it goes. It's utterly confused. And more than that, if we think in these terms, And you preach in these terms, and you set up systems of morality based on these terms of, well, this is good, and you should follow this, and that's bad over here, and don't do that. This is confused. Who's going to say that? In other words, this doing good stuff and avoiding the bad stuff, this doesn't provide you with any basis whatsoever for morality, for a system of morality, something to live by. Sooner or later, it's going to erupt in some kind of trouble, some kind of conflict, possibly even in your own mind. And it leaves us kind of wondering, well, what is this all about? What is human life anyway? What are we supposed to do? And where is it all going? And all kinds of people out there, most people, they got their own views about this. All the way from just being, sarcastic and giving up in disgust, or thinking it's all silly or whatever, or devoutly believing this or that. This is the human situation, for the most part. It doesn't have to be this way. This is what the Buddhist teaching helps us out with. It's this very problem that I'm trying to get us to focus in on here a little bit. And what I'm saying, too, is that this idea about karma and good karma and bad karma, and you should do the good karma, that's part of this whole confusion. And if you hang on to that understanding of the world and how to live your life, you will remain confused and you will never see the freedom, the liberation that is being pointed out in the Buddhist teaching. Because there is a way, a very simple and clear and clean way, it's not confused at all, that we can point to, that you can see for yourself. The hard part will be there in just reminding yourself of this and coming back to this. It'll be hard enough for you to remind yourself of what I'm pointing out right now. After the talk today, you might never give it another thought. But if you're really at a point where you want to just get out of the base mass confusion that people are otherwise caught up in, there's something important here to understand. You won't understand it intellectually. You won't get an idea about it, a concept, an image. That's what's difficult about these teachings. I'm not giving you any picture here to hang on to. All that can be done is we can point out the confusion, and we can also point out why it's there. This is what the Buddhist teaching is about. And we have it in all kinds of, all sorts of places. It's not about good and evil. Well, I'm speaking of, I already mentioned the 183rd verse of the Dhammapada. It gets translated as the Buddha said, to do what is good, avoid what is evil. But that can be translated differently. And if you want it to match what the Buddha actually was teaching, the bulk of the teachings that we have, you wouldn't use those terms. That was a poor translation. The Buddha said something like this, because he wasn't speaking in English, but to get it into English, that doesn't do too much damage to what was originally being pointed out. The Buddha said to do what is wholesome, avoid what is unwholesome, purify your own mind. And then he said, this is what the awakened teach. That's it right there. It's the whole thing. And that underlies all of the correct teaching that we have of the Buddha. You're going to find that in it. I'm going to try to help you see that here with an example. But this is so important. But most of us are not only oblivious to this, we can even study these teachings and practice this way for a long time and still not understand this. I certainly went on long enough before I finally woke up and realized what was being pointed out. It's very easy to do. And especially we've all been kind of conditioned, maybe most of it more or less anyway, to be a good boy or girl, as you're growing up, and don't do the bad things and that sort of thing. So it's deeply ingrained in us. probably no matter what background we come from. And then we can get kind of tired of that too and rebel against that because it's kind of preachy and, you know, shaming and blaming is used and stuff like this. It's a very unhealthy kind of system. And especially to what, base a system of morality on that confusion? No, it doesn't work. But what the Buddha pointed out here in the 183rd verse of the Dhammapada, to just do what is wholesome, do what is of the whole, of totality, of the immeasurable. Act out of that. Speak out of that. Understand out of that. And speak and act. Avoid that which is unwholesome, not of the whole, of the divided, of the fractured, of the imagined self and self-interest, or the interest of my party or my group or my family or my whatever, my religion. Here's where we fight, because we're never going to agree. Coming from various backgrounds and things, we have different ideas about things. And a lot of that is fine and wonderful. But don't lose sight of the whole or the wholesome. This is what the Buddha is pointing out. And what is that exactly? What isn't anything in particular? If it were, now we got a problem. Because now, that's just one more of the things. But that's where we go, because we want to get hold of some object there, or something, some principle, something I can understand, grasp with my mind, if not with my hand, or, you know, just with something. And we do this because we want to be comfortable. We want to actually have something, or maybe some principle I can build my life on. But that you have to see, just see. Don't do anything about it. Don't try to figure out, don't try to extrapolate something from it or drop some principles from it and preach those or work on it. Just simply see this and recognize, you know, watch your own mind and see. That's what the Buddha said in the third line of that verse. Purify your own mind. Just watch your own mind. Notice when you are holding a grip view or you're working off of this principle or something else, some constructed thing in your mind. You know, I was a teacher here for quite a while. Many people, not always just people from our group either, but others would come and see me. But it was always coming with views and understandings, even about Buddhism or about Zen or what expectations of me or what I was, or it was endless, really. But it was always confused. And it's not easy to point that out to people. You can't just slap them in the face with it or something like that. Maybe sometimes that's the appropriate response, but probably not in most cases. But what? Sometimes it might take a while. And for people who are just passing through and just wanted to see me or something, maybe not enough time. A lot of circumstances where there isn't anything you can do. Well, and that's another thing, too, I was going to say. I went over this, passed up this part where I was going to inject it, but the story of the Buddha in terms of the good and evil and acting out of that. Part of this is, yeah, maybe there are things you can do acting out of the whole. Like that pretty famous story, I think, of the Buddha, you know, his countrymen, his land, his tribal areas or wherever. There's a word I want, but I can't. Anyway, but it was going to be attacked by this invading army. And people came to the Buddha and many happened to be near, you know, situated where, near this road where the general was going to come down and on his way to attack the Buddha's homeland. And the Buddha sat under a dead tree. And many of you know the story. And it touched the general's heart. He stopped, you know, and he looked and it was very strange, a man sitting under a dead tree in the hot sun. Normally you'd sit under a nice lush green tree and get some shade. So he goes over and asks the Buddha, you know, why are you sitting here out in the hot sun under this dead tree? And the Buddha said, for me, I'm peaceful under this tree that grew in my native land. Something like that. And it touched the general's heart. And he turned his army around and went back. But then the other part of the story is later, the general was convinced by others, just kind of working on him to, you know, no, this is the time to attack. And so he comes and again and to attack the Buddha's homeland. The Buddha was not in the region quite at the time, or he was farther away or whatever. But people ran to get him, and anyway, when he got there, the battle was already engaged. And the Buddha sat on a hill over the, he could see it all the fighting going on. And he said, well, go out there and do something. You have to do something. And often, you see, we feel this way too. We want to do good. I want to do some good in the world. But so often, we're right up against, you know, big battles and things that are happening around us, and it's, what are you going to do? Or even then work behind the scenes to thwart the enemy and that sort of thing. And we might be working on things like that. But in this case with the Buddha said, no, they want to go out there and do, what's he going to do? What can he do? There was that time when the army was coming along the road and he was able to say something there at that time. Worked for a time, worked for a while, and now the battle was engaged. And the Buddha said, no, it's not time to act. So we always have situations like that. And the wisdom that comes with this other way of looking at things, and not just always pitting what we think is good against what we think is evil, or to even try to figure out, is that really good? Is this really? Don't bother with that. It'll never be settled in your mind or in the world or in other people's minds. Just if you want to do what is of the whole, what is of a settled mind, of an awakened mind, just don't do that. Don't engage that. But I also am trying to point out that doesn't mean you can't act. But there's a wisdom that comes with knowing when to act and how to act. But that will not come to you if you're panicking or, oh my goodness, I'm out there ready to fight. Or this is what this teaching then is about in the end. Of what, in terms of what should I do and what can I do? It all has to do with settling your mind. It's not about psychoanalyzing yourself or anything like that, studying your mind or making up theories about mind and consciousness and things like this. It's not in any of that at all, whatever you might think or create. You know, these might be handy or useful ways of thinking about it. Yeah, maybe to some extent. But none of that will ever get you out of the base confusion that you're otherwise locked in to. It is simply a matter of learning to settle your mind right here, right now, with whatever faces you. And it's not a matter of good or evil. It's a matter of quieting the mind. And this is what the teachings are about, the true teachings, the ones that aren't confused. There are teachings that have come along and kind of leave us just as confused as we were before that. If it's some kind of teaching that is recommending something or steering you in some particular way or to do this or to do that, except in maybe small ways. It might be small exercises and things you can do to help settle yourself. But now be very careful to watch any kind of dependency in your own mind on doing this sort of thing or going through this particular ritual over and over and over again. Maybe unless it's something like brushing your teeth every day or something like that. But even there, you can fixate on that and go crazy. It's possible. But you want to watch for that sort of thing. But otherwise, just recognize when your mind is reaching for something. It's going for something. It's thinking this is good and that is bad. This is something to, you know, go toward and to avoid and that sort of thing. Recognize when that's taking place, and recognize that when that is taking place in your mind, you're going to be caught up in picking and choosing and that sort of thing. So we have these teachings, and they're all over the place. And like I said, this is behind pretty much everything that none of you have met me before I understood this. So, but once I understood this, it was 40-something years ago now, this is underneath everything that I've taught. It's behind everything I've taught in any kind of a formal way anyway. It comes from this very base understanding, which it's not explicitly stated here anywhere in what I'm going to read here. But it's there. And if you see this, what I've been trying to help you notice, then you'll see it in the true Dharma teachings, the ones that aren't confused. There are plenty of teachings out there. Not all of them are coming from a full seeing of Dharma. Because it's so easy for many of us, you know, to, you know, we become, say, teachers, but not really quite seeing the whole thing. But that's still, you can still go out there and help and offer what you can, all of you. I mean, not just necessarily those designated. If you truly see something and you truly understand it and you truly are observing your own mind and your own mind is not leaning in one direction or another, it's not inclined toward this or away from that, and it seems like it's coming out of wholeness in some way, then you'll be fine. But now listen to this. I've never pointed this out in this way before. Some of you are very familiar with this piece, I think. That's one of the reasons I wanted to. Yeah. But you'll find this in all the great teachings, the true good teachings. But maybe with what I've pointed out today, just listen for this. This is saturated with this matter of this correct understanding of karma, this correct understanding of willed action, leaning of mind, tendency of mind to go this way or that. This is saturated with things pointing this out in one way or another, speaking of it in one way or another. Saturated, I shouldn't do this, but we happen to have, Ann and I, we got this this time of year, you get the fruitcakes, you know? And normally I don't like fruitcake, I'm not, but this one, it was very good. We had a movie night here last night, so we brought it. And that's for tea tree. For those of you who are here, I'm sorry, those of you who are online, you'll miss the opportunity. But this particular fruitcake was made by Catholic monks. So forgive me, because normally we don't have alcohol on the premises here, but this fruitcake is saturated with Kentucky bourbon. And it's really good, I must say. Anyway, that's waiting for you downstairs if you want to hang around for tea tree. anyway, though quite a bit of it, I think, was consumed last night at the movie thing. But that kind of saturation, it made me think, given what I was going to talk about today, this teaching is sort of saturated in the way that fruitcake has been saturated with Kentucky bourbon, so it's just giving off this fragrance, you know. Well, in the same way here, I think. Well, maybe not quite in the same way, but in a similar way. But see if you can hear this. The true Dharma teaching will, and you can go looking for this. If you gotten any sense of what I've been trying to point out here, I hope I got it across a little bit. This is not easy, you know, to. Because it's very subtle. But now that I've pointed, and we're talking about, you know, the leanings of mind, the picking and choosing of mind, he uses the term here. And look at it in terms of wholeness, or the fractured, the divided, the unwholesome, wholesome or the unwholesome. It's just saturated with this, though it's never explicitly stated as such. Or, well, sometimes it gets pretty close to that. So I'm going to read from the Xinjingming, the trusting heart mind. Right off the top, you might not have noticed this before, but line after line after line is, well, what I've been pointing out, without ever using the words or images that I've used. And I say, all true Dharma teaching, if you look carefully, it'll have this flavor, this saturation coming forth. So trusting heart mind. The great way is not difficult. There is nothing it prefers. So they're right, that, right there. And that's also pointing out to, that's the great way. This is the mind, capital M, mind, reality, totality in itself. And you can watch your own mind, not as a comparison or anything, but just realize that this mind is yours right now. What might be blocking it? Well, if your mind is tossing about and reaching here and there, and telling one story after another, and justifying this or that, well, it's not the mind of the great way. But this mind of the great way is your mind. You know, it's your treasure store, as Dogen would say. But there you go, and then just on and on it goes, and in one way or another. The great way is not difficult. There is nothing it prefers. Only when you neither love nor hate does it appear clearly, without disguise. So, so the thing about good karma and bad karma, I want to do something good and nice, you know, that isn't in our teaching. It sounds good. I mean, yeah, of course, yeah, I want to do good things too, but what exactly are they? But I try to be good and nice and kind to people and offer these teachings. If people want to come in here, then, you know, that's been going, people do that, so. But yeah, I understand all of that. And I want to help you. I truly do, in the deepest way that I can. But still, to do it in terms of good or bad or whatever, or to some purpose or whatever, the only purpose is simply to help you settle your mind, quiet your mind, start to notice when your mind is caught up in this entanglement or that or one thing or another, rather than to just stop and be aware of that. That's all. You don't have to condemn it. You don't have to get down on yourself for it. We don't have that in our teachings. It's just to see. Just see that. That's enough. If you stay with that, eventually your behavior and your way of speaking, everything will begin to change. But not in a way directed by you or anything, but just notice these things and just avoid the entanglements. That's all. But first, you have to start to see how that's going on, or that is going on in your mind. But again, here, so it's only when you neither love nor hate does it appear clearly. So this reality, this wholeness, this totality, this evenness of mind, this settledness of mind, this awakenness of mind can be seen clearly. But only when you neither love, you're not tossed away by in one way or the other here. Consumed with it, love or hate. A hair's breadth of difference, and heaven and earth are set apart to the extent that this is split in some way. What you're viewing, what you're seeing here, it's like heaven and earth are split apart. Now there seems to be good and what we can call good and what we can call evil, not realizing that if you try to move around in the world with this idea that you have, it's going to get caught up in all kinds of confusion immediately. Why is that? Well, just settle your mind. Come back and observe this and see where your mind is going. It's reaching, it's grasping. This is what's taking place. So if you wish to see it, then hold no opinions either for or against. Yeah, opinions, well, ideas, thoughts. So it's one thing to have a thought or even an opinion perhaps, a belief about something or someone, but don't hold it. That's the thing. The holding it, and the Buddha speaks of this is freezing an idea in your mind, even if you think it's good, you know, but don't hold it, don't grip it, don't identify with it. Don't say, well, I am of that, or I want to be like that, or that is a quality that I have, or something. Just stop all of that kind of thinking and you don't need to be busying your mind with such thoughts or activities. Just see what is taking place allow the mind to settle. If you don't keep stirring the pot, it will settle out. It doesn't immediately stop in the settlement, if you say you've been stirring, but just let it sit. It'll stop of its own. And then your own mind is the same way. And start to recognize how it is that you stir it up, and you stir it up, and you stir it up, and you stir it up here, you stir it up there, you stir it up all sorts of things. This is an awakening. If you truly are interested in waking up, what a Buddha is, by the way, this is what most distinguishes an awakened person from one who we might say is not awakened. Even though, of course, in a sense, this is all awakeness. But if the confusion is there, you don't realize it, so there you're caught up. But what most distinguishes one who's awake from one who is not, it's kind of a funny thing because in a way you can't really just make the distinction. But it does have to do with this matter of the busyness of the mind and the stirring of the mind and the gripping of the mind, the acting out of will or intent. If your will or intent is just simply to be awake, and you understand what that is, and allow your mind to settle, then awakeness is here. It's here right now, but we just keep stirring, so we don't notice. But if you just stop that, here it is. So it's very simple in that regard. What's difficult is to recognize what you're doing and that you don't need to do it. You don't need to take anything away from this. You don't have to have an idea about this. You don't have to have a theory. You don't have to have some rules of conduct or anything of this sort. Just watch your mind and recognize when it's getting stirred up with one thing or another. And again, this is why another kind of teaching from Suzuki Roshi, where he said, when my talk is over, your listening is over, there's no need to remember what I said. Just watch your mind. He didn't say that part, but that's all you need to do. So if you wish to see it, then hold no opinions, either for or against. Don't hold them. Don't grip them. You know, the thoughts and ideas, let them just pass through, you know, like clouds passing by the mountain. You can just sit there very calm and still, like the mountain. The clouds of different thoughts of your mind, just let them pass by. You don't have to engage them in any particular way. They might tumble and change as a result of passing by, but that's fine. You can just sit there, like the mountain. That's one of the images that's used sometimes for give you a sense of shikantaza. Anyway, so to set what you like against what you dislike, yeah, this is the, I'll read what it says here. To set what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. Yeah, the disease of the mind. So in setting what you like against what you dislike, just look at them. You don't have to pit them against each other or weigh them against each other or do anything. Just see. And most of all, just see how your mind might be reacting to this. You don't have to do anything about that either. Just see. If you really see it, your mind will begin to settle. Give it a chance. But this is all you have to do. You don't have to figure anything out. You don't have to do anything in particular. But don't be too engaged in too many things all at once. Sometimes you have to. You know, that's fine. But otherwise, give yourself a chance. That's why we have this practice that we do. Just settle out. If you're settling out for some reason, so that maybe I'll wake up or something like that, well, no, you're keeping it busy. That's stirring it up. You got ideas about that. If you look, those ideas are, you don't know what you mean by that. You don't know what any of that is. You just start to recognize that. And then just settle down. You know, just come back to just this. So this practice, this way, is very simple. And it's so simple that because we're so complicated in our minds, we find it difficult to find our way to this. But anyway, to set what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. Not knowing the profound quality of the way, this is reality here, we disturb our original peace of mind to no purpose. Your original peace of mind is totally calm, settled, but we disturb it to no purpose. It's perfect like great space. The way has nothing lacking, nothing extra. By our accepting and rejecting, we lose sight of the true nature of things. So it's through this, accepting and rejecting, and this is bad, and no, that's not good, and that's not the right practice, and endless stuff like this. but with this, we lose sight of the true nature of things, which is that they're of the same nature. You know, it's all of shunyata, emptiness, the same flavor, as Nagarjuna says. So neither chase after outer entanglements nor dwell in emptiness. Be serene in the oneness of things, and confusion will vanish of its own accord. If you linger in either extreme, how can you realize that there are not two? Without a thorough understanding of oneness, both movement and rest will be insufficient. Just the more talking and thinking, the further from the truth. Abandon wordiness and intellection. There's nothing you cannot penetrate. You know, do not seek after truth. Only cease to cherish opinions. You know? So don't. How are you going to go after truth? I mean, do you think it's like some particular direction or something? What? Just here it is, right here. It's truth. Truth with a capital T. Not your truth or my truth or Buddhist truth or some truth that can be delineated and spelled out and weighed against other truths or something like that. It's not something to seek. You already have it, in a sense. It's just, it says, do not seek after truth. Only cease to cherish opinions, to hold onto opinions. Ah, this is what I think. This is what I believe. This is right. This is what happened. All of that. Don't hang on to it. It doesn't mean to throw them away or something. That's now you're doing something with it. Don't do anything. Just be aware. That's the word that the Buddha used to some of his teaching in a single word, awareness. You know? Anyway, but as we go on through this, it would be the same way. And you can get into some other teachings and you'll see the same sort of thing. So I would invite you, as you're reading Dharma teaching, it's true Dharma teaching, you'll see this underlying, I don't know, flavor or aroma. Just coming up, wafting up, you know, like the Kentucky bourbon wafting up from the fruitcake. Well, anyway, I guess the hour's almost up. I'll just stop here. But any questions or arguments? Or?
Steve?
Yeah.
I just wanted to say thank you so much. That was incredible.
Oh, okay. You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Anything else? Nothing out there. Okay.
I did want to say one more.
Oh, yes.
Thank you for the opportunity to recite that every other Friday.
Oh, well, sure.
I deeply love that piece, and I'm grateful that we get to do that.
Yeah, yeah, it's a wonderful piece. Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, it's like bottomless.
Yeah.
What's in there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.